want to connect to this podcast, the RSA fingerprint couldn't be validated, but you said yes anyway. Welcome to Hope This Helps, episode 20. You apparently connect via SSH now.
Yeah.
Because Telnet is kind of insecure when you really think about it.
It really is. I mean, it requires the port to be wide open.
That and authentication is not great, and you can kind of intercept it very easily. Not like SSH ain't perfect, but I think it's better than Telnet.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes.
Yeah, so random security recommendation of the day that you may or may not have asked for, but welcome to Hope This Helps. We are a podcast for sysadmins or IT tier 3, tier 0, tier 1, tier 6, whatever, and we talk about whatever we feel is on our mind. I'm Steve.
I'm Tiffany.
And it's glad to have you along again on this July 9th, 2020.
Yay!
Finally back on a regular schedule.
Yes.
We got stuff. We got various topics. Some are follow-ups from last week. We're going to talk about things like Docker, maybe some Azure Logic apps, Windows Admin Center, PowerShell, more PowerShell, and some trivia facts and questions of the week all coming your way in this podcast.
This is excellent. We're finally getting a format underway.
You know, I think we'd finally should have a format for our 20th episode.
Right. We're getting there. Progress is slow, Steve. Progress is slow.
It is slow, but it is steady. In 4 more episodes, we'll have enough content that you could listen to us for a full day if you really felt that masochistic.
That sounds horrible.
So someone out there is going to do it, I'm sure. Maybe.
No. I think we would have to pay them.
Welcome to the Hope This Helps podcast, where we pay you to listen to us.
Hey, that gets us listeners.
We do whatever we need to do to survive.
We'll pay you.
Okay, let's do the boot up random topics and things. And this first topic, I think, is yours, because I have no idea what this is. Something web content filtering with Microsoft Defender ATP.
Oh, so this is really interesting. For those who have been network administrators in their lifetime, ATP, Microsoft's Defender ATP, they have now put web content filtering into public preview. So if you are utilizing, I almost just said every single browser possible except for the one that I wanted to say.
What if I'm using Lynx? What if I'm using IE4?
Well, then you're SOL.
Oh, well, you said every browser, so I'm going to use every browser.
I meant current, okay?
Oh, there we go. Current, every current browser, ladies
every
and gentlemen.
Current. So you can create a policy to block all adult content across all your machine groups. So it's actually almost like a GPO that is web content filtering.
It's like ADT for your ATP.
Yeah. Are you down with ATP?
I'm down with ADT and ATP.
Get all of your security needs.
All in one place.
For your home.
I have ADT at home. It's just a sliced off 2x4 wedged in between the window when I have the AC unit in, and I just took a Sharpie and wrote ADT on it.
For some reason, I thought you almost said ADD.
ADD?
You're like, I have ADD. I have ATP, ADD, and the other one, ADP.
I may have lots of undiagnosed whatevers. Undiagnosed ATP.
I have all the A's. We just totally did like an ad drop for ADP.
We totally did. We're not getting paid by this company whatsoever.
Anybody, really. We just talk about it.
It's most likely not sponsored if I drop a name company or whatever.
Right, we're just saying it because we found it. We're like, ooh, shiny. Anyways, what the heck?
Yeah, what the HEVC? There's been a security vulnerability discovered in the HEVC codec. Microsoft offers support for this codec through the Microsoft Store, and there is a remote code execution vulnerability for this. It's CVE-2024-1425, and basically it has been patched. It's not in the OS by default, so you don't have to worry about it if you don't have this installed, unless you went out of your way to install it in the Windows Store or it's been deployed to your system. But the most interesting thing about this is the patch has been deployed through the Windows Store, of all things. Not through Windows Update, not through WSUS, through the Windows Store. So affected customers will be automatically updated by Windows Store. Customers do not need to take any action to receive the update, states Microsoft. And they had an FAQ section, why are these security updates offered to affected clients via the Microsoft Store and not Microsoft Update? These updates are for optional apps and components that are offered to customers as a download via the Microsoft Store. Updates for optional store components or apps are provided via the Microsoft Store. So you have another thing to check if you need security patches for something. It's not just Windows Update anymore, it's the Microsoft Store if you installed this. Which is interesting because a lot of other codecs are built into the OS and they are offered through the monthly cumulative security patches. But not this one. This one is special.
Special. Sorry, it took me a minute. I was a little slow. I was just honestly like engrossed in the F5 stuff.
So yeah, enough about this. Just think, Microsoft, way to be consistent. And okay, enough with the chips and dip. Let's get to the big one, the F5 vulnerability. So this one is a big one. If you use F5 load balancers or F5 devices, you need to patch right now and do it yesterday.
For lack of better words, you're effed.
You're effed 5 ways from
Sunday?
Thursday.
Thursday?
Yes, effed 5 is what we're going to be calling this vulnerability. Yeah, this one allows for unauthenticated attackers, users, microwaves, grandmas, Yoshis, anything to basically get in with, blah, 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 you know, I'm not going to read this whole thing. You know, CVE-2020-5902 is the vulnerability. It was sent out by U.S. Cyber Command as a, like, drop everything and patch this kind of patch. So F5 obviously has known about it. You should install it. You have to be on F5 version 15, I believe. If you have any custom hotfixes before, you might want to check with them to see if this one is compatible with it, but there's a chance it probably will be. Patch your F5 soon, please.
I'm just mostly concerned at the fact that it's unauthenticated attackers.
Right, that was why it was escalated to such, you know, severity 0 or severity 5, whichever direction on the scale we're going to. Basically, it's if you have network access to the config utility through the big IP management port or self-IPs, blah, 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 execute Java, bleh, nasty, nasty, big, bad things.
I love your translation to layman's terms. Nasty, nasty things.
Nasty, nasty, not the good nasty, the bad nasty.
Yeah, good times.
Yeah, or bad times.
Ungood. Ungood.
We're becoming more of like a security podcast, aren't
we? We really have become very security focused.
We're talking about CVEs, Defender ATP, F5 vulnerabilities, and we're not done. We're also talking about TikTok as well, continuing our discussion from last week.
Every week we have all these security things.
I mean, it's important. Security is everyone's responsibility. If you're a sysadmin, you should be thinking about it almost as much as the security people at this point. And that includes BYOD and your TikToks. So here's something for your FYP. The United States is looking at banning TikTok and other Chinese social media apps. So it seems that hope this helps is so influential that we have drawn the attention of Congress and other critical people high up in the U.S. and they're looking at banning TikTok.
Hooray! They listen to us.
I always say looking at, but yeah, I like to say maybe they listen to us. We're pioneers in this kind of stuff based on our heated discussions from last week.
I think we need to redo our intro. Hope this helps the security podcast.
I think we're onto something. We need to add a subtitle.
Right.
Hope this helps. Coming soon to season 2, the security podcast.
Right, the second edition.
The next 20 episodes. Right. We cap off this first 20.
Don't download anything. Don't. Just don't.
Just don't. Just bring a brick to work and use that as your phone. Just something that can't even connect to a network. Something that can't even make calls. Use that as your phone.
Do you believe that they'll actually ban it?
I am unsure if TikTok will be banned. I think it is our best hope, and I think there'll be a lot of discussion over it and a lot of talks in security-minded circles, but I think it's kind of a toss-up. It's kind of a 50-50. I guess it depends on how much money is made from it in the right places and whether or not they want to shake up international relations and whatnot. So
makes we'll sense. See. Yeah. It'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm. So that's the TikTok story. There is movement on that. the usual nouns and verbs, and people in all the places are making the rounds and just kind of starting to get wise to this whole thing that it's kind of slurping up data, and that's not good.
No, not at all. No data.
There's also allegations against about children's privacy acts as well that TikTok is not doing so well at keeping up and up on.
Oh, absolutely not. There's definitely some sketchy stuff that goes on that app.
Yeah, all kind of, I think there's not enough moderation. They just let anyone in. It's almost like everyone forgot that COPPA exists and all kinds of laws that were established, you know, over a decade ago to prevent stuff like this. And apparently, you know, with mobile, it's just, we just forgot all of this existed and we're just forging ahead because...
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't help that with quarantine, a lot of millennials started using the app too. And I think it became slightly a platform where people started realizing the variety of people on the app.
Right. With a lot of apps that start out small, with small circles, some issues don't come to light until they hit critical mass or mainstream popularity. This is one of those things. I mean, not to say TikTok was a niche, small app before, but I think it had its age groups and its groups of people using it. And now it's maybe with COVID, more people are noticing not so great things are happening with it.
Right. And they're realizing that it's not regulated and they're taking advantage of that.
Enjoy TikTok while you can, if you got it. And because there's a chance it might go away at some point.
Soon.
I don't know when. I'm not going to make any predictions.
No.
Okay, done with talking about security for at least a little while here. Microsoft Teams, new stuff all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
They made a bunch of announcements, including Together Mode, which means, you know, the things you can do in Zoom with the grid view and everyone. Well, that's finally coming to Teams, and they're catching up a little bit with the mode called Together Mode.
I think the weirdest part about Together Mode is that, like, you can put yourself in an auditorium.
Yeah, that's kind of cheesy. I kind of like
cheesy.
That.
I know. I kind of want to just play with it and just have my face all over, like kind of be able to transpose my face onto everybody else's face.
Right. Yeah. You know what? I do kind of like that. What if you can change everyone's backgrounds? Like, you have control over the virtual backgrounds you can set.
Yes. Or what their chairs are in the auditorium.
So they also announced Dynamic View, which is kind of, I guess it's like an evolution of the current speaker view, but it might be like if you're presenting and you need things to, you know, scale and get bigger and smaller or switch around and have controls. It'll be more of a fluid experience that you have to think less about. Because I know at least with Zoom and RingCentral, when I'm presenting, I get kind of screwed up because all the controls move around, especially if I have to share my screen.
Oh, that was one of the biggest complaints on my team, is that when people join and leave a meeting, there's always this one guy and his photo always stays front and center no matter what. And we're like, but why?
Yeah, my problem with Teams video chat in general is, for me at least, the video is kind of laggy. And I know it's not a network problem for me, because in RingCentral, at least, this doesn't happen. It's when someone speaks and it goes to switch, like everyone goes down to like a 3 frame per second frame rate in their video on Teams, and it has to like kind of catch up a little bit. And sometimes if someone has video on, it won't even show their video. It'll just show like a bubble with their initials or their profile photo, and it takes a couple of seconds for it to show up. So you might not even realize that they have video on.
So there are ways to track and see what the lag and where the lag is coming from. And in the Teams Admin Center, there's some really cool stuff in there.
Yeah. Oh, that does remind me, actually. Teams does have, remember that feature in Skype for Business where you could like shift or alt click something, some other modifier key, and click the icon in the system tray to get diagnostic information?
Yes.
There is that same diagnostic information stuff is in Teams. I'll have to pull it up. I just remember this. I saw this browsing somewhere where you can actually access that same information. It's almost identical to what it was in Skype for Business. And it's particularly useful for if you're having lag when you're in calls.
So in the actual Teams center, where you can look at the call quality, it will tell you what headset people are using, what their network is, if they're going through VPN. It'll give you detailed information about the quality of the call. It'll tell you who had the worst quality, and kind of like rank people, and you'll get like a little poor, it'll say poor if your call quality was poor next to your name. And then when you click into your name, you can actually view and see, and it will tell you everything you could ever want to know more. And if you're still, so once you figure out what the issue is and who is lagging and why, because some, it will even tell you what their network devices are at home.
That is fantastic. I bet that information is the same. Yeah, that's probably the same info. That sounds familiar to me.
Yeah, but it allows your administrators to get it for you. Or to figure out how to fix the call quality, because then they can go ahead and ping. So there's a subset of Microsoft IPs. So if you are going through VPN and for some reason that traffic isn't routing out directly, you can ping those IPs as you're on a Teams call and test it that way too.
That makes sense. Yeah. So it's probably just, yeah, this is probably just aggregated to the Teams admin center, my guess. So it's available at the local endpoint if you don't have that such access, like myself and my org. But yeah, if you have the central, if you have the access to the backend like that, yeah, you can definitely get, you can see all of that, and you can probably make better determinations than power off and on the router again, or
yeah, don't do
reboot
that.
Your computer. Yeah, you don't usually have to do that.
Nope. Because I can say after we configured and set everything up in my org, we have almost no call quality issues.
Oh, that's
or
good.
Video yeah. lag or anything like that. So it does come down to the networking, even though networking will say, oh, it's not us, but it really does come down to it.
That's good. Yeah, I have some problems at home myself, but I think it might be just me because I don't hear a lot of complaints from other folks. It's usually just my own stupid network or stupid computer.
Well, someone else did complain to me about the call quality. That does work with you.
Oh, well, there you go.
So...
So, okay, that's good. Maybe, okay, then I retract my statement. Maybe it wasn't me. Who knows?
It's not you, personally. Yeah. It might be. But the only way to find out would be to look at the call that had the issue and see who ranked the worst.
Yeah, statistics rules above all else rather than yeah. just opinionated things like that.
Right. Like, Steve, you're the worst. Your call quality is absolutely the worst.
Oh, yeah? Well, let's look up the telemetry on that and confirm
let's
that
see.
In the Teams Admin Center. Let's open up a PowerShell window and go get dash Steve's crappy video quality.
All right, Steve, you're like 333 milliseconds off.
Oh, that's pretty bad. Okay, I concede.
All right. Are you succeeding or conceding?
Yes.
Yes. Both.
Okay.
Nobody gets our jokes.
No,
nobody
we're
gets
bad.
Our weird.
Oh, God, we're the most unfunny people.
We really are.
Okay, is there any other thing worth notable in these announcements, chat bubbles?
Let's
things?
See. We're gonna just spend an hour talking about Teams.
I hope not.
I hope not either. I talk about Teams way too much these days.
We got other things to talk about, right?
What's a reflect message extension?
I saw that too. I'm not entirely sure what that is, to be honest. I was trying to avoid that one because I didn't know what it actually was.
It will make it easier for managers, leaders, and teachers to track their team's performance, the status of a project, an event, or change within the organization.
Oh, this is an education feature of some kind if you're using Teams for classes. It's a Google Classroom competitor, it looks like.
Yeah, I don't want anyone to be tracking my performance. It's yeah, it's kind of like my mood up and down. Anyways.
Yeah, I'm just looking through before we move on. I'm just checking anything else in here that's notable. I'm kind of coming up with almost nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be dedicated Teams hardware, Microsoft Teams Display Initiative.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
You want to buy a screen that runs Teams because you don't have seven other screens that run Teams already?
Well, I bet it sounds like they're trying to get into like the digital workspace. But if everyone's working remote...
It could be... Yeah, this is a bad time to be announcing hardware right now, to be totally honest.
Right.
It's probably a competitor to, you know, Avaya or RingCentral, Broadview, Mitel. I don't know if half of the companies I just listed still exist or not, but you know, probably a competitor to those.
I'm just taking a look. How to open multiple Teams channels in separate windows.
Oh, that's live. The Popout is now live. Yeah.
Well, yeah, Popout chats, but I didn't know for channels.
Oh, channels, maybe. I accidentally kicked in a Popout chat the other day when I was at work. I double-clicked something too much, and it opened up another window. I was like, that was how I found out that Popout chat was a feature.
I have a gripe about Popout chat. It's basically useless, because if I'm in the Teams console, and maybe I've just gotten so used to it, if I'm in Teams, and then I have the Popout chat going, I just reply to the message in the team, to the chat, because I'm already in there.
Yeah, so it has to be more Popout-y than it currently is, I guess.
More of, like, it's if I have a Popout chat, I want it to be the only thing dinging, like AOL Instant Messenger style.
I have overall gripes with Teams notifications in general. Like, they never clear, or I have to right-click to mark them as read, even though I have the chat open. And sometimes you can kind of cheese it by scrolling up and down to get the unread flag to go away, but sometimes it just won't. And you have to right-click the stupid icon on the left, or you have to go to your activity feed and mark it as read from there. I don't know if you have this problem, but as someone who's a member of like 1,000 teams in my org, you know, it's dinging all day and I have half of these muted, but the badge won't ever go away. So it's hard for me to tell how many messages I have that are unread that I actually care about, or... As an OCD person, I don't want that badge to be there half the time.
Yeah, that would drive me insane. Luckily, I don't have any teams that I'm in so far. Because I'm like the only person who uses it.
Yeah, well, I can personally vouch, if you're a member of like 1,000 of them and you're getting added to random ones all the time, you know, the notifications and teams at an application level is not super great, and I have lots of complaints.
Complaints, complaints, complaints.
I think they're still working on the RAM consumption of Teams as well. So Teams is an Electron app, which means it's based on Chromium, which means it eats your RAM for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and a snack.
Sounds like Exchange.
Yeah, just like Exchange. It wouldn't be a Microsoft app if it didn't have some kind of RAM problem.
If it didn't eat your memory. Sounds like all of the products. I'm kidding.
I sound like such a mean person.
You do. Wow. I'm sorry. He's not like this in real life, I promise.
At least not out loud.
No, this is where he vents, and he gets it all out.
Welcome to the Steve Vents podcast. I hope this helps.
Where Steve is just angry all of the time. He's true sysadmin on this podcast. I wouldn't be
a sysadmin if I wasn't angry, at least half of the time.
It's very true. It's very true.
It just gets me in the mood, and it ups my quality of work, for sure.
I think that should be part of like the interview process. It's like... Are you angry 50% of the time? Why, yes, I am.
Like, you are given a ticket, and it is missing half of its information. How angry are you right now? And if you're not, then sorry. We thank you for your time. That is Teams.
Teams.
Teams is Teams, and Teams Welcome. Is gonna Teams.
Welcome to the Teams podcast, where we could talk about Teams for days.
And sometimes we can, but... I'm going to stop that right now because we're going to shift some gears into some deeper weedy topics. This one's a loaded gun complex, dock it and pull it. This is Docker that we're going to be talking about next.
Did you just make a Fall Out Boy reference?
What, you didn't get that from the notes that I wrote?
No, I did, but I didn't. It was funnier when you said it.
Oh, well,
because
awesome.
You put it all together. So I was like, dock it and pull it, and I really was thinking like salt and pepper. I don't know why.
Oh my God, no. Wow, comedy really is all about timing and prose and spoken word, isn't it?
It really is.
As usual, I'm happy to explain the jokes whenever they are not clear.
No, I figured it out. It was just funny that it took me so long.
I don't know why, where I come up with these.
No, I love it. I was like, wait, did he just pull a you just like Rickrolled the internet with Fall Out Boy.
I know some pop culture things, mostly, I don't know, I play Rock Band. There's Fall Out Boy in Rock Band. Fall Out Boy's not a terrible band.
No, they're not. I actually really enjoy them quite a bit.
Yeah, I kind of came up late in listening to them. I mean, I don't really listen to them, but I played them in Rock Band. I'm like, wow, this is not bad. Their drummer is nuts. I play expert pro drums in Rock Band, and wow, yeah, wow. This is difficult. This is fun. Like, that drummer is no joke.
You're like, this is great.
Anyways. So totally not Fallout Boy. So Docker Compose. So what is Docker Compose? Well, let's back up a step and say, what is Docker? So
what is it?
So I think we might have briefly touched upon Docker in a previous episode where we were kind of linking it with Kubernetes and Azure. So Docker is kind of like the next generation of virtual VMs, to put it simply. Docker is basically like a portable application that is easily created and destroyed and reconfigured in a very, very quick and manageable fashion. It can be ported to any kind of cloud service. It can run on Raspberry Pis, and a lot of your favorite applications may already be available in Docker, depending on what platform you are running or how you want to use it. So some examples that I personally have been using are Plex, Qubit Torrent, File Browser, Minecraft, and Apache HTTPD. So if I can explain the simplest of them. So let's talk about Plex. So Plex, normally you install it as an application on your computer. It's a media server. You have to set it up and then you go into a web interface to configure it. Maybe point at some shares or drives or folders containing your music, photos, videos, and it runs on your computer as a server application installed. You have to download it. You have to maintain it yourself. You have to update it yourself and everything. What if you took that and you turned it into a container and it was hosted elsewhere on, say, hub.docker.com, and you pulled it down using a configuration file, which is known as Docker Compose, which is a .yml file, which contains all of the configuration information and service setup. It's basically the runbook for this container. Plex exists as a container for the Linux server, and in our case, a Raspberry Pi. Something that tiny and that small can run a Plex server just fine, as long as you have the correct electrical and drive requirements fulfilled. It is basically, it's kind of like JSON in the sense that it is a standard template. There's documentation on it. You can pipe in variables and key configuration thingies to this file. You can host it on GitHub. You can import it manually. You can specify it at the command line. Whichever preference you fancy can be done with Docker Compose. And in a lot of places, we will get to the enterprise angle of this in a moment, you can host it in a DevOps environment, which is version controlled or code, you know, group reviewed, peer reviewed, and that helps your enterprise with controlling the environment and reconfiguring it very quickly with tracked manageable change metrics. So with a Plex Docker, let's say I want to deploy it. I want to point it at a couple of drives that I have attached to the same server, and I want to keep it the latest version, and I want to specify its name and all that kind of stuff. So with Docker Compose, you can do just that. You deploy it. In the file, you can specify the image name, the network mode, various environment variables. In particular for Plex, you only need a version one, which you would just say the Docker version, which will guarantee that anytime you redeploy this container, it's going to be the latest version. You specify your volumes, which would be, in the case of Plex, I personally have 4. One is the configuration volume, which is hosting basically the application data for the container. So if you destroy and recreate the container, it's not a problem. It just looks at this folder and it just says, okay, we'll just pick up right where we left off, but maybe with a newer version of the container. Hence the portable, destructive, reconstructive, cattle, not pets nature of containers. Then the other volumes may be your share for videos, photos, or audio, whichever. The sky's the limit on how creative you want to get with that. You deploy that, and that is how you can basically stand up a container, mostly configured with maybe minimal additional setup, depending on how flexible the application you're deploying is. And that's about all there is to it. You can do similar things with Apache HTTPD, which I, for fun, deployed at home, where I deployed a sample website where I just said, point to this directory, which is going to host all of my web pages. I just put together a crappy little HTML thingy to say, hey, this works. I can host a web page. I could port forward it if I really wanted to. I could specify what port I want to serve this website out of. That is basically all there is to it. There's a lot of different containers. You know, you can, the only limit is your mind in terms of how awesome you want to be with Docker. So that is basically the general gist of Docker Compose. So why do we really care about this? So in, as I said before, the infrastructure as code mentality is kind of taking off, in particular in places like Azure, where, again, it's if you host your configuration as code, whether it be JSON or whatever, in a collaborative environment such as Azure DevOps or GitHub or GitLab or whatever it is, you can ensure that the configurations are consistent. You can switch on a dime if you need to. If a change needs to be made, you can just say, update this code and redeploy the container. It'll look at that and it'll just, you know, the snap of a finger, it can pull a new version or just reconfigure itself on a dime. That is the general gist of Docker. It is, you know, most of the cloud services already support it. You can install Docker for Linux, I believe for Windows and Mac. I'm actually not super familiar with the Windows and Mac versions. I've been running it on the Raspberry Pi OS in particular through Portainer and Docker on top of Open Media Vault. But that is the general gist of Docker and Docker Compose.
I'm very intrigued. I haven't ever touched Docker, but everyone talks about it.
It's talked about a lot. A lot of applications will say, yeah, we offer this here, but we also have a Docker image if you want to just pull that down and use it. And in a lot of cases, it's kind of nice to demo apps that way too. You can just pull it down, and if you like it, you can keep it and you can configure it. And if not, you can just delete it. It's much lighter than running standing up a full separate VM, especially in Azure, where that costs a lot extra. Instead, you're just running an application as a Docker, and it probably will save you a lot of cycles and time and credits.
Ah, that makes sense. I get it.
Probably also applies to AWS as well, I'm sure.
Oh, for sure. I think that's a big one in AWS.
That has been my TED Talk on Docker. Thank you very much for attending. I yield my time.
Thanks for coming to Steve's TED Talk. So, yeah, I want to talk about Power Apps and what's the difference between a Logic app and Power Automate, because I myself am now getting into that as I'm trying to build out some Teams governance.
Power apps. You mean they're not just a bunch of if statements as Logic apps?
Well, they are, but...
Or case switches or something?
I will tell you now that I understand why you would use this over PowerShell.
Oh, really? That's fighting words.
I know. I feel like I say it and you're just like, no, that is not
true. As the resident PowerShell enthusiast, you're going to have to do a lot of explaining to convince me otherwise.
So let's talk about Power Automate versus Azure Logic Apps. An Azure Logic App is, so it's a difference between SaaS and PaaS, like the different kinds of logic and applications. But I will tell you that Flow or Power Automate can get quite expensive, because once you want to use the Graph API, you have to start paying for those connections, even though it's part of the Microsoft whole suite and everything. So if you make a call via that API, you have to pay. Whereas a Logic app, if you decide to make the call to the API, it's all built in.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, because using Power Automate, it hooks into other features of O365 and M365. And Microsoft, of course, would love to bill you if they can.
Right. And it's absolutely, I was speaking to someone the other day about this, and we were both like, come on, it's kind of built in. And you can use the API. So there's PowerShell commandlets for it. You can use Azure to get it. But really, you can use Power Automate. Getting there. Well, you can. It's just going to cost extra.
Power Automate also didn't really impress me in terms of its interface and how confusing it generally was. It reminded me of a little of iOS Shortcuts, where it's like, I get the idea, but it could have been executed a lot better.
I agree. I do find it kind of complex, but once you get in there, you can use JSON and you can actually start building out a real application. And now there's more automation as far as being able to use Visual Studio with it. and being able to really get in there and start building out real applications. However, if you're not, if you don't know anything about JSON, then PowerShell is going to be the way to go.
I think I know a JSON.
I do. I know a couple of JSONs. The whole reason for these applications is to automate workflows across applications and services. So you can connect and loop everything in, sort of like a service bus, without having to involve other complexities.
Do you have to pay extra for this? Like, say, you have an Azure subscription or O365, is this built in?
So with the Azure subscription, if you already have an Azure subscription, it's with that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so if you don't, then you have to get an Azure subscription.
Yes, I believe you were telling me about that.
Yeah.
The pitfalls.
I finally got one. I got my hands on one, so I'm pretty excited about that. It just took a little while, but I already built out the PowerShell. So
is it like a real one? Is it like an, or is it just like an Azure Pass, like a almost like a trial?
No, it's a real one.
Oh,
I'm nice. Actually signed up for the subscription.
Oh, that's awesome.
After I had to hunt down like 6 people, and I was like, "Are you my Azure subscription person?" It was like a Dr. Seuss book.
Are you my Tam?
Can you help me?
I'm so photoshopping something later.
You have to. I require that. So basically, the gist of this, before Steve and I go on our own little wacky adventure down a rabbit hole, because it will happen, is they are definitely useful tools to have. But if you want to automate something or build an app, because it's really cool, you can build out a logic app to have maybe an administrator create a SharePoint list or upload a CSV and add and remove bulk users to Teams that way.
Oh, so that could work.
Yeah, so you can do stuff like that in either of them, but Flow is probably going to cost you a lot of money. Whereas yes. Logic app, you can just build it out. You can put the JSON in there. You could with the Flow too. Basically, there's the same thing, just in different spots, in my opinion.
Awesome. I've never used it. I have no comment.
Because you're never going to. You're stuck on PowerShell.
Yeah, I'm team PowerShell until they wrested away from me like they have in a couple of places.
Yes, they have. To the graph. To the graph.
The graph API.
The graph. I have some gripes with it, but overall it's pretty legit.
With graph or with logic apps?
With Power graph. Apps. With graph.
Oh, yeah.
Just minor ones. Like, why is it so complicated?
That seems to be our common theme with a lot of products. Maybe we're the problem.
We might be the problem. It might be the ADD that we have.
The attention deficit ATP disorder.
ADP.
ADP.
OPP.
OPP.
I had to add another 3-letter acronym in there.
We can add tons of 3-letter acronyms to lots of things.
A star star.
You know what's another 3-letter acronym?
What?
A whackronym, you might call it.
A whackronym.
So that's whack.
That was totally accidentally awesome.
Let's get a little wacky over
All
here.
Right.
Windows Admin Center. I have opinions about Windows Admin Center.
You have opinions all the time.
I have lots of opinions. I think that's why we have a podcast. We have opinions.
Right, because no one else will listen to us during the day.
No. If anyone was listening to this, they would be like, Steve, how do you even work here? What is going on?
Do you even go here?
Who gave you a card to get in here? Did you steal somebody else's? Like, you're just walking in, you're just complaining about Windows Admin Center all day. You haven't done a damn thing all day.
Except for a complaint about it.
I'm totally not productive. So Windows Admin Center, the core concept of Windows Admin Center is it is a web portal of sorts for managing other servers, and it's kind of meant to be a bit of a replacement for the Computer Management Console or MMC or you name whatever random console you've needed to connect to throughout the years on a server. And it's meant to bring all of that into one single pane of glass management system where you can select your server, you get a million buttons to click, and I'm saying I want to do like scheduled tasks or local users and groups or certificate management. Say I want to do all that kind of stuff, you know, the usual MMC garbage that you have to do with on a server. So the idea that is peddled around is never RDP into a server again. Use Windows Admin Center. RDP is more likely to be attacked, and you might as well plug that hole by not using RDP or reducing your reliance on RDP and using WAC instead.
That, I don't know if I like that.
I do like that idea in theory.
In theory!
A lot of ideas work great in theory, but in practice, it doesn't work so well.
Hold on. So I just said in theory, and my phone thought I just said, hey Siri.
Awesome.
I just heard it go off in the background.
That is excellent.
It's across the room, and I just needed to...
Siri also has opinions about WAC.
In theory.
I don't think I'm on a speakerphone over where you are, so I don't think I'm going to trigger it.
No, you're in my headset, so my phone can't hear you.
So first of all, WAC doesn't really support Firefox all that well. That's a non-starter for me. No mozzarella for WAC. So you can use WAC with Firefox, but there are whole settings panels that are unavailable, such as the shared connections panel, which is kind of critical for WAC. That is the area where if you're going to add new servers for all users rather than yourself, you have to go in and you can import users using the robust Active Directory import feature.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You know what doesn't even show up in the menu as a button if you're using Firefox? Shared connections menu. It doesn't even show up. And you know what? Is it in the documentation? No. You know how I found that out? By getting frustrated and opening frickin' Microsoft Edge. And it's like, I open that up and it's like, oh, look at all these extra options I have. I can do shared connections.
You sound so angry. You're like, I had to open it up.
I had to resort to using Edge.
By the way, you're not a Windows administrator at all, are you? Because I couldn't tell by how angry you are. You sound like a Linux admin now.
I'm becoming a angry Linux neckbeard for no reasons, no enterprise reasons. It's because I'm setting up Raspberry Pis a lot, and I'm just getting more into Linux and Unix terminal.
You're just getting bored with your life.
I'm starting to perform, do more projects around the household or whatever, get more into just technical knowledge, know-how of other platforms other than Windows, because Windows is kind of boring me a little bit. But anyway, so yeah, I have to use, Edge or possibly Internet Explorer. I bet Chrome works with this too. It's probably a Chromium-based browser. Maybe not Internet Explorer now that I think of it. To access some of the core features of WAC and the shared connections and stuff. There's also slow load times with WAC. I've noticed, it's kind of when doing anything. You know, if you want to load the Windows Admin Center, you get a big splash screen that takes a while. If you're on a VPN, it's going to take even longer. You get in there, you get your list of servers. So I want to, okay, let's say I want to check a DC, check the DNS DHCP console. Let's click that. Oh, I need to connect to this DC in WAC. I'm like, okay, that's fair. That's fine. Let's click it. I'm already authenticated with my account. Can I just authenticate by default with that? Oh, your credentials didn't work. We tried the credentials that you used to get into this console with, this Windows Admin Center with. I'm like, what do you mean? This account should work everywhere. Okay, let's provide my same credentials in the manual credentials entry box. Okay, now you're connected. So now I'm connecting to the server. I'm waiting for it to connect. I'm waiting for all the stuff to load. And now I can do something with the server. That's great. Will this connection be persistent? Close the tab and find out. My general gripe with this is connecting to a server takes time. You can't really connect to servers in batches. If you select multiple servers in WAC, you can't. The connect button actually goes gray. You can't actually connect to them. It's really obnoxious. The credential management is nothing short of really obnoxious. It seems to have features such that you can apparently save your creds, but it doesn't seem to work that well. Or at least it just will take the very account that you want to connect with and it'll think that it's not going to work until you re-enter your credentials. So that's annoying. In order to switch to something else, you usually have to click out of whatever you're in. It would have been nicer if there was more of a tabbed UI or a scrolling modular UI, kind of like Azure, where you can kind of keep scrolling left and right to tell where you are in context and easily kind of scroll back to where you've been. And also, one of the big things which I thought was really annoying, something you can do in computermanagement.msc, but not apparently in WAC, is you can't really do local groups management. You can certainly view the groups, but if you try to manipulate them, you get a strange error that doesn't make a lot of sense. So it seems like the feature is supposed to be there, but doesn't appear to be working.
That's really sad about group management.
It is, because if, say, you want to audit your local administrator groups or take a direct delegate out of the local administrator's group and put them into an AD group instead so it's more manageable that way, it's currently not really easily attainable because the feature appears to not be working very well.
So how is this supposed to replace RDP again?
So it's meant to be that instead of RDPing in and, you know, getting your desktop and getting your start menu, it's supposed to give you, you know, the buffet table of stuff you would use if you were RDPing in. But a bunch of the stuff is either the user experience is poor or it's missing features or it's just plain old not working that well.
That doesn't sound great.
Yeah, like the scheduled tasks UI in WAC. You can't import an XML like you can in the scheduled task console on a server if you were RDP'd in or using RDS. So little things like that, really annoying, and it's not quite one-to-one. So I appreciate the effort to modernize, but much like the modern settings window in Windows 10, Windows Admin Center has a long ways to go, and a lot of stuff is just not there.
I imagine that the push to get it there, will happen a lot quicker, but definitely seems to be premature.
Yeah, it certainly updates quite frequently, or at least on a biannually cadence.
Words are hard. I don't know. But twice a year. Semi-annual or whatever, like how Victoria's Secret has a semi-annual sale.
Yeah. Windows Admin Center updates at the same cadence as the Victoria's Secret
semi-annual sale.
There you go. That's the glowing review of Windows Admin Center.
It only gets updates.
Yes, only updates and not much progress and frustrations across the board.
Hooray.
This is definitely a product where maybe I'll check back on maybe several months or years from now and maybe my opinion will change, but right now...
You're killing me today.
I don't know. Some stuff has gotten better, you know, years later.
Oh yeah, it takes multiple years sometimes.
It's definitely...
Like, maybe some millennia.
It's definitely true for, like, video games, so I don't know. I'll check back on it later someday with maybe WAC will be the future, but definitely not now.
Yeah. Okay. Steve's going to rant some more.
Oh, God. I have another
About PowerShell. Yeah, you're all like ranting me grand face. I moved mine till next week because we are coming up on time.
Okay, yeah, I was about to ask you. You had a segment, but it suddenly disappeared.
I do, but if we're going to have like a two-hour podcast.
Yeah, I mean, who's counting the time? But yeah, we can keep it down to a nice. Oh my God. Okay, I promise this will be fairly quick. So Steve, in our Steve Does PowerShell series, we're going to do some PowerShell.
Steve Does PowerShell.
What to do if you can't update your modules?
Run away.
This is less of how to code things in PowerShell. This is how to fix something in PowerShell. This is a really frustrating problem that
I came across.
Particularly if you installed packages using install module from the PS gallery, particularly maybe months or years ago, and you go to install it using update module, you may get an error stating unable to resolve package source https www.powershellgallery.com/api/v2. If you made any TLS changes in your environment or any kind of encryption certificate-y kind of stuff, like you turned off TLS 1.0 or enabled 1.2, there's a chance that that is the reason that your update module is not working. I think Microsoft also made a few adjustments to the PowerShell gallery's URL that also kind of threw it off slightly. It took me a really long time to try to figure this out, ranging from trying to uninstall the module, admin rights, rebooting, you name it. But the final fix for it appeared to be a strange esoteric .NET service point manager command, which basically just says .NET.security protocol type is TLS 1.2. You run this command and try to run your update module again, and it should work. This command appears to be per user. You might be able to run it as an administrator to do it system-wide, and there might be a registry key you can set, but I'm not entirely sure. That command is in the show notes. If you've been suffering from this issue, you're welcome. And by you're welcome, I mean thank the person from, I think it was Stack Overflow or Stack Exchange. It was Stack Overflow. It's always Stack Overflow on the command for this. I don't believe it was actually the upvoted answer. I think it was one of the answers below it that wasn't upvoted. So kudos to that guy very much. And that is how you can update old modules that may not be getting updates, such as your Azure AD Preview or your Teams client or Exchange Online PowerShell V2 or whatever, you name it. So that is the fix, the PowerShell tip of the week for updating modules.
Yay, I ran into that this week as well, but mine was a little bit more complicated and more annoying, but we'll save that till next week. But now it's time for our new segment, That Is Accurate.
So what is accurate this week, Tiff?
Email existed before the World Wide Web.
That is accurate. Is it accurate?
It is accurate. It was interesting because there was a show in the 80s, I believe, called Database. And in there, the presenters demonstrated what it looks like to actually send an email back in those days. This was before the WWW days, so you would just pop in the IP address, and then the webpage number was 776, and you could just pop over an email. So email existed before the internet.
Simpler times. Was it like through like the Gopher protocol, or kind of one of those weirdo
it was a database. It was just using like database tomfoolery.
Yeah, it was probably, you know, select computers at universities talking to one another.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like how Facebook did their thing.
A little bit.
But in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, yeah, 80s. Was it really the 80s?
Well, the concept was being developed.
Yeah.
I don't think it actually had the name email. I don't think anyone thought of that at that time.
Maybe electronic mail or something like that.
Yeah. Look at this. I can send you a message.
Well, and then Tim Berners-Lee came along with the www, and the rest, we'd say, is history.
Yeah. From there, done and done.
Speaking of done and done and old technology.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I was just typing this up, and I thought it was fun. But if you could bring one technology back, what would it be?
So, that is the question of the week this week. One technology back. A lot of technology isn't really truly gone. I guess, a technology.
It can be hardware, too. So, if there was a computer, like, you were in love with, or a server. Boy.
It might be the Xserve.
Oh, I missed that so much.
My first foray into sysadminship was actually the Apple Xserve, particularly the G5 one, and then the very last Xserves ever made, actually, the quad-core Intel Xeon Xserves. Where I worked was at a TV station where we had a single G5 one, which was a workhorse for very long, serving out XSAN, DHCP DNS, Open Directory, LDAP, and then we replaced it with the very final Apple Xserves ever made, the final models. They were two quad-core, and they ran Snow Leopard server. I believe we might have upgraded them to Lion server before I left. That hardware was fantastic from Apple. That's the quote-unquote technology I would bring back for sure.
It lasted so long. Mm-hmm. It was just amazing.
It always just worked. It was easy to work with. I miss it.
I would oddly bring back the original iPhone. It was just very simple.
The original one?
It was, maybe like the 3. But when they introduced the App Store, back in the simpler times. I mean, I was a first edition iPhone user, and now I just feel very overwhelmed by way too much stuff.
Maybe we're just getting old.
We might be getting old. This podcast has now become about us getting old and complaining about all the things that are terrible now.
We are crotchety old sysadmins.
We are crotchety and old.
Yes.
We're not even that old. It's fine.
We wouldn't be sysadmins if we weren't.
But I have to agree with you on the Xserve.
Yeah.
That was one hunk of metal.
That was one classy pizza box.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty. It was shiny.
It was lovely, you know, stuffed in a server rack that you never looked at.
Exactly. Beautiful. Well, that concludes this week.
That is the end of our podcast journey for this week. I hope this helps. We are on the internet.
We're on the internet. HTHPC.
Yeah, HTHPC.com. rate us on iTunes if able, and we record live when able, and we tweet when able, we blog when able, we do things when able. When able is when we do. You know, check out our stuff. We have a Twitter, you know, we're around the internet. HTHPC.com is our hub for all things Hope This Helps. You can check out all the previous episodes and show notes there. I think that's it for all this. That's all I got. I don't know if you have any closing thoughts.
Yeah, Tiff. No.
I usually tweet under the Hope This Helps account. I don't know if Tiff, you can be found anywhere.
I can be found on the Twitter sphere.
The tweeters.
The tweeters. Hello, it's Tiff T-Lac. I don't even know my Twitter handle. That's bad.
It's fine.
That's terrible.
I think we have our Twitter handles on the Hope This Helps Twitter. So you know what?
They are there.
HTH the podcast is our Twitter handle, and you can get to everything else that way. It's nice to just be able to say things like that.
We like to make it easy because, again, we hope this helps.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, so we'll be back, I think, hopefully next week for more things. Tiff will talk about breaking PowerShell, and hopefully we'll come up with other fun stuff, and maybe half the podcast will be about security again. Who knows? We'll see where life takes us. We hope this helps.